is one war story that everybody needs to hear at least once. It is the crazy story of how this small group of Russian soldiers during World War I defended Osowicz Fortress in Poland. It is both absolutely horrific and utterly inspiring. And I guarantee you, it's nothing like any other war story you've ever heard. But before we get into that story, if you're a fan of the strange, dark, and mysterious delivered in story format, then you come to the right place, because that's all we do, and we upload once a week. So, if that's of interest to you, please sneak in to the Like Button's house, take all their fresh eggs out of the fridge, hard-boil them, and then put them back. Also, please subscribe to our channel and turn on all notifications so you don't miss any of our weekly uploads. Okay, let's get into today's story. Russian soldier named Vladimir Kotlinski looked out from behind the huge stone walls of Osowicz Fortress in Poland. Out in front of him, he saw the same landscape he had been looking at for the last 6 months that he had been stationed at this fortress. It was a big, swampy forest that surrounded them on all sides. Additionally, in this swampy forest around them on all sides were dozens and dozens of trenches. Trenches are long, deep pits that soldiers would dig to both hide inside of when they're being attacked, and then also to launch their own attacks out of from behind their dirt walls. And these trenches that zigged and zagged all around Osowicz Fortress were created by, and now occupied by, 7,000 German soldiers. And during World War I, the Russians were fighting the Germans. The Germans really wanted to take Osowicz Fortress from the Russians. It was in a great strategic position with a railway passing right through it. There was also a river nearby and a main road, meaning whoever owned this fortress was greatly aided in moving critical wartime supplies and troops in a very hotly contested area. But despite the repeated attempts by these 7,000 Germans to take over Osowicz Fortress over the past 6 months, they had all been repelled by Vladimir and the puny 900-man Russian force inside of the fortress. And so, by that morning, August 3rd, 1915, as Vladimir is looking out from the battlements over the trenches in the marsh down below, it was like both the Russians and the Germans had reached a sort of stalemate, where neither side was trying to attack the other, and neither side was leaving. They were just kind of staying put and doing nothing. In fact, over the last few weeks, there had been so little action from either side that the Russian soldiers inside the fortress got so bored, they began sneaking out the side door of the fortress to try to catch fish with their bare hands in the nearby river. But this morning, as Vladimir stood atop the wall, he noticed something strange happening in one of the trenches that was located closest to the fortress. It was still several hundred feet away, but he could see clearly down into this trench. And what he saw was there was this cluster of high-ranking German officers that were kind of huddled together, and they kept looking down at the ground, at something inside of the trench that Vladimir couldn't see, and then they would look up at the sky and kind of wave their hands around, and then they'd look back down at the ground below them. Now, Vladimir had no idea what they were doing. I mean, again, he could not see what they were looking at in the trench, and when he looked up into the sky where they seemed to be looking, it just looked like a regular blue sky. But whatever they were doing, it was making Vladimir feel nervous. Vladimir was a young, junior officer, which meant he was in charge of other soldiers, but because he was so new, he lacked experience and credibility, and so really wasn't considered a serious leader within the army. And so, Vladimir, as he's watching this strange behavior, was concerned that if he left now and told his superiors that he was worried about the Germans because they were looking at the sky funny and looking at the ground funny, that it would make him look like he was being paranoid and not a good leader. And so ultimately, Vladimir just looked at this cluster inside of the trench and decided, you know what, they're not shooting at us, there's no attack happening, so whatever they're doing, it can't be that big of a deal, and lately, no one's done anything, so why would that change now? And so Vladimir left the walls of Osowicz Fortress and went down below to hang out with his friends. 3 days later, at 4 a.m, the Russian soldiers who were up along the Osowicz Fortress walls keeping watch that night noticed something strange out in the darkness near where the Germans were. When they looked out, they saw that the dark night air almost looked kind of blurry or wavy, kind of like if you were looking at air coming off of hot pavement on a sunny day, it would look kind of blurry. That's what the night sky looked like to them. But of course, it couldn't be because of heat and sun, because it's the morning, it's cold, it's dark outside. And so as these Russians are looking out, not sure what to make of this blurry air, they began calling up more Russians to go have a look and figure out what this was. And over the next couple of minutes, as the Russians looked out from behind the walls at this air, they realized what it was. It was this huge grayish-green cloud that was as wide as the fortress was, and the wind was blowing it in their direction. Now, the Russian soldiers had no idea what this was, and so they just kind of stood there watching it in stunned silence. And as they watched, they saw as the cloud would touch any vegetation, like leaves on trees or the high grass in the marsh, it would all turn black and shrivel up. And then the soldiers began hearing a soft thump, 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 thump out in the darkness. And it was the sound of birds dying and falling to the ground that were inside of this cloud. At this point, the Russians began to panic, and they began to run to sound the alarm to get the other soldiers up to prepare for an attack. But as they did, they began to smell this very harsh chemical smell coming into the fortress, and then before long, all the Russians could hear was the sound of their comrades coughing. It would turn out that strange behavior that Vladimir saw 3 days earlier of the German officers huddled together looking at the sky and then looking down at the ground and then back at the sky again, what they were doing was preparing for a chemical attack on Osipich Fortress. On the ground, out of sight of Vladimir, were canisters containing the poisonous gas, and when the officers would look up and put their hands up, they were gauging if the wind was strong enough and in the right direction to launch the attack. Now, 3 days ago, the wind had not been in their favor, but this morning at 4 a.m. on August 6th, 1915, the wind had been in their favor, and they had released the gas. And this gas was quite possibly the worst gas you could ever come up against on the battlefield. It was a combination of chlorine gas and bromine gas. On their own, chlorine and bromine are very toxic and can kill you. But when you mix those two gases, it becomes exponentially more dangerous. The gas mixture binds to moisture and then turns the moisture into hydrochloric acid. Meaning, if a person who did not have a gas mask on came in contact with this poisonous gas, when they inhaled it, it would literally fill their lungs with acid, which would dissolve them from the inside out. And then also, the gas would get into their eyes and into their nose, and the acid there would burrow holes into their skull. And once you've come in contact with this gas, there's nothing anybody can do to save you. You're gonna die, except it's gonna take a really, really long time. You don't just immediately dissolve. It's this long, drawn-out, excruciatingly painful process. By this point in World War I, chemical warfare was really not being used by anybody, and so as a result, the Russian army did not outfit their soldiers with gas masks. The German army did, and they knew the Russian army did not. So, as this horrific poisonous gas began permeating every square inch of Osipich Fortress, all of these Russian soldiers had nothing they could do to protect themselves from this gas. And so right away, soldiers began bleeding from their eyes and their mouths and their ears, and they literally began coughing up chunks of their lung. And so very quickly, the Russians inside the fortress understood they were being poisoned. And so these soldiers that were not as affected, at least not right away, by this gas, quickly began ripping off their shirts, dunking them in water, and wrapping them around their heads to try to limit how much they breathed in of this chemical. But it really didn't do much to stop the chemical. In fact, these makeshift gas masks might have made it worse because the gas would have bound to the moisture on the shirt. And so the Russians were totally doomed. They were surrounded on all sides outside the walls by their enemy, and then inside the fortress was this gas, and there was no ventilation in the fortress, and so there was nowhere to go. They couldn't escape death no matter where they went. And so Vladimir, he was one of the guys that was still on his feet inside of the fortress, and he stumbled over to this narrow window on the side of the fortress walls, and he looked out, and he saw all these Germans running towards them, firing their machine guns, artillery's being fired. I mean, he knows they are moments away from the Germans reaching the fortress door, coming inside, and killing every last one of them. But Vladimir's reaction to this was not being scared or being sad. Instead, he suddenly felt incredibly motivated. If they're going to come in here and kill us, then we're going to make it as hard as humanly possible first. Vladimir had a reputation for being totally fearless. Over the past 6 months that they had been under siege from the German army out in their trenches, anytime fighting broke out, Vladimir was always the first to run up and be right on the front line of fighting. And then several times when his comrades had been shot or wounded, Vladimir would run out into the line of fire to save the fallen soldiers. It was like Vladimir lacked any instinct for self-preservation. And so as the Germans continued their run towards the fortress, artillery shells are hitting the walls, there's constant gunfire, and Vladimir, he leaves his window, and he marches back over to the open courtyard inside of this fortress, where the 100 or so other still living Russian soldiers were. I mean, they're all gonna die. They've been totally poisoned by this gas, and it's just a matter of time now, but they're still on their feet, and Vladimir walks over to them, and even though, again, he's pretty junior, he stands up and he says to them, "This is our moment. We are all going to die. But what we do right now will define us." And the way Vladimir said it, he got those 100 soldiers who were on death's door to be so motivated so quickly that they rallied to him. And so as these men are literally bleeding out of their eyes, their mouths, they're coughing up pieces of their lung, Vladimir explained the plan. And then moments later, with Vladimir in the front, this gaggle of soon-to-die Russian soldiers charged towards the gates, opened the fortress, and began running out towards the Germans, screaming with their bayonets lowered. Now, the Germans on the outside fully expected that this chemical attack would kill all of the Russians, that taking Osipich Fortress would be super routine because when they walked in, everybody would be dead. And so suddenly to have the fortress open and have these men that are covered in bloody rags and they're puking up pieces of their organs and they're stumbling forward like zombies with bayonets out screaming like banshees, it scared the living shit out of the Germans. In fact, they were so quickly terrified by what they saw, they literally dropped their guns, turned, and began running back towards their trenches. And as they did, Vladimir and his dead man army began picking off the Germans one by one. And then after Vladimir and the dead man army ran out of ammunition, they just continued staggering forward directly into the thousands of Germans in front of them and began picking up dead German weapons and firing them. And then when they got up to the trenches, where these retreating Germans had been so scared they had run into their own barbed wire, and so there's all these retreating Germans stuck on the barbed wire, the Russians just began bayoneting all these men that were stuck. And so at some point, as Vladimir is doing this, a German soldier ran up to him and bayoneted Vladimir right in the stomach. He ran him all the way through until the barrel of the gun was right up against his stomach. And Vladimir apparently looked down at this bayonet, knew he had been completely run through, and he looked up at the German who had just stabbed him, who was still holding the gun, and Vladimir spit blood and lung tissue all over this German's face, and then just began screaming directly at this guy. And so the German was so scared, he just dropped the gun, turned, tried to run, and then Vladimir was back on his gun with the bayonet still in his stomach, shooting at the Germans. The Germans were so completely caught off guard and terrified by Vladimir's dead man army counterattack that even though they outnumbered the Russians 70-1, they failed to take Osipich Fortress. The main reason for that was the Germans who had escaped the counterattack and made it back to their trenches, they told the other German soldiers that the Russians had turned into zombies, literally, that they were undead, and so attacking them was pointless. They're already dead. And the Germans were so scared, they refused to leave their trenches again. Once the Russians could tell they had successfully forced a retreat by the German army, Vladimir, who was still alive at this point with a gun still stuck in his gut from the bayonet, he called out to the rest of his soldiers to retreat back to the fortress. And so this handful of Russian soldiers who were about to die, they hobbled their way back inside of their fortress, and then Vladimir gave his final command. destroy the fortress. If we can't have it, nobody can. Every single Russian soldier that came in contact with that poisonous gas died, including Vladimir. When the Germans did eventually take Osipich Fortress at a later date, when again, all of the Russians were dead, when the Germans went inside, they realized the fortress had been destroyed and it was no longer strategically valuable. Vladimir would be awarded posthumously Russia's highest military honor. His actions and the actions of the other dying soldiers that fought alongside him are remembered today in stories, songs, and statues all across Russia. $250,000. That's how much you all contributed to Dave Hartsock's GoFundMe page after we covered his story on our YouTube channel. Dave is the heroic skydiver who sacrificed his body to save his student. Now, because of that, Dave is totally paralyzed and fully dependent on his mother to take care of him. I spoke to Dave after all this money came in, and to say he's happy is such an understatement. I mean, this literally changed his life. And it's because of you. But as awesome as that is, our work is not done. There are other very deserving people that really could use our help. And one group in particular that really needs attention are the victims of violent crime as well as their families. And that is where the Mr. Ballin Foundation comes into play. Within days of the Uvalde Elementary School shooting, the Mr. Ballin Foundation sent $150,000 to support victims and their families. And going forward, we will continue to support them as long as they need support. This year, in addition to all the donations we expect to receive, our company, Ballin Studios, which is a separate entity, is going to be giving $1 million to the Mr. Ballin Foundation. And all of it will go to the cause. We are not taking any money for profit in Mr. Ballin Foundation. Truly, 100% of donations that go into that foundation go to the cause. And if you don't know this, that is very rare for most charities. Usually, you gotta pull money to pay for the organization, not for us. It is 100%. You give money to the Mr. Ballin Foundation, it goes right out the door to victims of violent crime and their families. So, if you want to join forces with me and the Mr. Ballin Foundation and genuinely make a difference in the lives of people that so desperately need our help, go to mrballin.foundation and click on Get Involved at the top of the page. Once there, consider becoming a monthly donor to the Honor Them Society. These supporters not only contribute to the cause, but also they get free gifts and exclusive invites to special live events. Again, go to mrballin.foundation and click on Get Involved to see how you can partner up with me and the Mr. Ballin Foundation. So, that's going to do it. If you got something out of today's episode and you haven't done this already, please sneak into the Like Button's house and remove all of their fresh eggs from their fridge, hard-boil them, and then put them back. Also, please subscribe to our channel and turn on all notifications so you don't miss any of our weekly uploads. We have a podcast called the Mr. Ballin Podcast that puts out brand new podcast-exclusive stories on Monday mornings, and on Thursday mornings, we upload the remastered audio of our best YouTube videos. Again, the podcast is just called the Mr. Ballin Podcast, and it's available exclusively on Amazon Music. Consider donating to our charity. It's called the Mr. Ballin Foundation, and it provides support to victims of violent crime as well as their families. Monthly donors to the Mr. Ballin Foundation Honor Them Society will receive free gifts and exclusive invites to special live events. Go to mrballin.foundation and click on Get Involved to join the Honor Them Society today. We have two additional YouTube channels, Mr. Ballin Shorts and Mr. Ballin en Español. We also put out near daily content on TikTok, Facebook, and Snapchat. All of those channels are just called Mr. Ballin. If you want to get in touch with me, please follow me on any major social media platform and then send me a direct message. My username is just at Mr. Ballin, and I really do read the majority of my DMs. To check out our merch, to join our Discord server, or just see what things are going on within our studio, go to our brand new website, ballinstudios.com. So, whether I see you on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Reddit, YouTube, Facebook, other YouTube channels, the podcast, wherever, just know that I really appreciate your support, and until next time, that's going to do it. See ya.
Albion Online is a sandbox MMORPG in which you write your own story instead of following a laid-out path.
The primary criticism of virtually every paranormal person claiming the event...
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Creek with Lap Podcast Show.
When up is down and a down is up, when your half full glass looks like a half empty cup, when you're running into dentists and everywhere you turn.
Well, I hope you like Mr. Byrne. Mr. Byrne, he's a really good guy, and I found him on YouTube, and I love his stories. So, Mr. Byrne, if you listen to Corey Whitlock Podcast Show, I pitch some of your stories on my podcast so people can find you on YouTube, and they can listen to you on my show as well. So, I love you, Mr. Bob, okay? And I love your stories, and... I just find all your stories fascinating, you know, really fascinating. I mean, they super stories. I mean, you should write some movies and TV shows, because you do a really good job telling stories. I mean, you should put some of these stories in books and TV shows and all. I'm telling you, you can do it, you know, but these stories are really good. One of my favorites is the time traveler killer. I think that was a really strange story about this sci-fi man who loved science fiction movies, and he loved that Russian girl, and then he found out at the end he killed her, and then he wanted to go back to time to try to stop himself from killing her. That's one of my favorite stories right there, Mr. Bob. So any of your people are listening to this podcast, and yeah, I play this for my audience because this show is about the supernatural and the paranormal and stories just like that. And I listen to you, and the way you tell your stories, I'm going to be doing the same thing. You know, I'm not going to be good as you, but I do write books, science fiction books and stuff like that, you know, but you do it really good, Mr. Bob. You do it really good, and I love your YouTube channel, and I love your stories. So here's some more of Mr. Bob's stories, and I hope y'all enjoy it too, my fans.
Family that were there and witnessed it with them, and you have Bill Vail has always been incredibly scientifically minded. He's always had technical jobs his whole life. He took a job for 15 years at NASA as a robotics engineer. He also spent a little time as a pilot for NASA as well. He is just somebody that is very process-oriented. And in fact, his family and friends, they say this with respect, but they say that, you know, Bill, he lacks an imagination. He's super pragmatic, super to the point, and doesn't really have time for creativity. It's all about facts. In 2002, Bill and his wife separate, and it catches Bill a little bit off guard, and it almost prompts like a midlife crisis for him, where, you know, before it had been really his work with NASA that had been fulfilling to him, and now he has this huge gap in his life, and suddenly he's looking around and he's like, "What am I doing all this for? Just takes a job at his brother's water purification company because he wasn't sure what he was going to do. He just knew that he needed to do something. So he gets a job at this water purification company and he starts working with his brother, and he finds that even though it's not the same type of work that he's doing as a robotics engineer at NASA, it was nice to be working day in and day out with a family member. So Bill has only been living in Arlington for just a couple of months, and he had only been at the water purification company for maybe a couple of weeks. And so when a Saturday house call was called into the company and no one really wanted to do it, Bill thought, you know what, I'll take one for the team, make a good impression on my coworkers, and I'll take the house call. And what it involved is part of Bill's job was to go demonstrate how to install and use this water purification system in customers' home. The dispatcher for the water purification company said to Bill, she goes, "Hey, listen, this is a little bit weird, but the person who called was adamant that you be there at 5 o'clock, not a minute earlier, not a minute later." And it was probably only about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and he's like, "So what do I do?" She's like, "I don't know, like, go get a bite to eat and just make sure you're there by 5. And so he does that. He's like, "That's weird." But he drives around and he parks outside of the house a little ways down the street, and a couple minutes before 5, he gets out and he starts heading over to the property to do this house call. He starts walking up the path to this big brick house at like 4:59, and as he's getting closer to the steps, he can hear through the front door, which he can already tell it's slightly open, it's not latched all the way. He can hear screaming inside of this house. It sounds like a woman screaming, and it actually sounds like she's screaming, "Get out of here." But he doesn't really know what to make of it. He has a job to do, so he walks up to the door, and even though it's open, he knocks. And now he can literally hear through the crack in the door that someone in this house is screaming. And he's listening. And finally, he decides, well, I should probably just open it up and make sure everything's okay, because I can hear someone screaming inside, the door's open. So he opens it up and he walks inside. He takes one step inside of the residence and just kind of peeks around, and he can see a little bit down the hall off to the right, there's an opening to a room. And in the room are three men on their knees in a little circle, and a woman is walking around them in a circle, and she's holding a book in her hand, and she's speaking in tongues, just nonsensical, couldn't make sense of her language, but periodically as she's circling them and she's touching each of their heads, she's screaming, "Get out of here. Leave these people. Get out of here." Bill is about to leave. He knows that this is just too weird for him, but right before he does, the woman who's walking around the three men on the ground looks up at him and points directly at him and doesn't break eye contact and just holds her finger out pointing at him. And he gets this very strange sense that, like, this woman wants to do harm to him. And so he just runs out the door and is like, "Yeah, I'm not going back in there." Goes back to his car and he calls the dispatcher back at the water purification company. And he's like, "Okay, I just took an insane house call. The lady in there is crazy. I'm not doing it. Don't reschedule. And if you do, do not put me on it because I will not go in there." Bill was a very straightforward guy. And he's just not going to let his imagination run wild with what they were doing. You know, those people are crazy, and that's not my business. It's not my problem. And so he forgot about it. He just goes home to his house, and he turns on the TV, and he gets his microwave dinner, and he's just sitting there eating his food and just having a nice Saturday night to himself, when out of the corner of his eye in his other room, and I keep in mind, Bill lives alone and has no pets. Out of the corner of his eye, He thinks he sees something small dart across the ground. He couldn't tell if it was flying through the room or if it was running through the room, but he just was like, oh, now I got, you know, some rodent or a bird or something in my house. It must have snuck in through the chimney. And so Bill is not scared. He's mostly, like, frustrated that now he has to deal with some rodent in his house or some bird in his house. So he puts his food down, and he turns on all the lights, because he was watching TV with the lights off, turns on all the lights, and just searches his house. He's, like, quiet, listening, trying to, like, hear where the thing went in his house. And he can't hear anything. And after over an hour, he just decides, well, geez, I don't know where it went. I don't know what it was. Maybe I didn't even see it in the first place. So that night, he wakes up suddenly to what feels like some small creature running over the foot of his bed, but, like, over his foot. And it instantly wakes him up, and he instinctively sucks his legs up to his chest under his covers, you know, as pretty much anybody would do when some random creature is running on your feet in the middle of the night. And he's like, great, this thing, it's probably, now you can tell it's a rat, it's a rodent. He's like, great, now it's literally in my bedroom on my bed. And so he flips on the lights, and now he's just mad because this is right in the middle of the night, it's the last thing he needs. And he lights on and he searches the room. He looks under, you know, his dresser, he looks in the closet, he looks under his bed, he looks everywhere. And he can't find this thing. He's stopping periodically to listen, and he can't hear scurrying or anything. Did I imagine that as well? Because, I mean, I guess I don't know if I saw something darting out of the corner of my eye when I was watching TV. I think I did. And just now, could that have been in my dream? You know, because he wasn't really awake for it happening. He woke up to it and thought it's what happened. And so he's starting to, like, tell himself that, you know what? I'm so... That's what prompted the thought that something had touched him. And so he's like, alright, whatever. Turns off his lights and he goes back to bed. So Bill falls back asleep, but shortly thereafter he wakes up again when his bed is violently shaking. He wakes up and his bed's shaking, and it stops almost immediately once he's awake. And he thinks that they're having an earthquake. So he jumps out of his bed and he's looking around to see if, like, things are going to start falling on him. He runs to the window. He looks outside. He can't tell what's going on. He runs into the other room, and he can suddenly tell, because he's in a bit of a panic, that there is no more shaking happening. But the shaking's done. The house is totally silent. And he runs back to his bed, and he has this thought, like, could I, in my sleep, have shaken my bed? And he had one of those huge four-poster beds, and he's, like, trying to move it. And Bill's a big, strong guy, and he can barely move his bed. And he has this, like, this memory of, my bed was literally shaking. And he's like, now this is three times that something strange has happened, and I can't make sense of it. And being a very kind of pragmatic person, and not one with, as his family said, a wild imagination, he did not have that. He's like, okay, let's find out if there was an earthquake. So he goes online, and he starts researching earthquakes. And he's thinking, maybe if the earthquake had just happened, that the news would break right then and there, some headline. There's nothing. And so he's like, okay, what other rational things could have caused my house to shake? Because, again, there's no other damage in his house. Nothing fell. It was just he felt the shaking, and that was it. And so he starts researching, like, what's in the area. And he finds that there was a military base, and actually it's an air base, right near his house, a couple miles away. And he's thinking, okay, well, you know, when the fighter jets are taking off, that take off at all hours, maybe there's a sonic boom from one of the jets accelerating. He didn't know if that was it, but he thought it could be it. And then he's like, oh, well, there's also all these oil rigs that are drilling in the area. Maybe there was an accident. So he's researching for, you know, recent accidents at oil rigs. And he's trying to find a rational explanation for this bed-shaking incident. He also can't help but feel like, what happened with that thing I saw that was, like, touching my feet? Like, he's not connecting the two events, but he has this weird sense that either something's wrong with him and he's losing his mind, or something really weird is happening in his property. So as he's trying to find this rational explanation, his internet goes out. And so he tries troubleshooting it a couple times, but he can't get it to work. And so he calls his service provider to just have them see if they can fix it. And so he calls customer service, somebody picks up, and they're like, yep, your internet's out, let me fix it for you. Let me put you on a brief hold. And so they put him on hold, and as he's sitting there, like, listening to elevator music, like, staticky sounds started coming through the receiver. He's just noticing it. It's nothing significant. But then a voice comes into the phone that is speaking in tongues, like, nonsensical language that sounds almost threatening. At some point, Bill is just totally unsettled by this voice, because it's just going on and on. He's been on hold now for like 2 minutes of this weird voice. He just hangs up. And like in just a couple of seconds, he gets a call back from the same customer service rep that he had just been speaking to. And he had an accent, and Bill picked up on it and said, "Hey, was I just talking to you?" And the customer service rep was like, "Yes, yeah, sorry, we got disconnected." And Bill says, "Did you hear that voice? Did you hear that strange voice on the phone?" And the customer service rep, who mostly operates on a bit of a script, kind of deviates for a second and says, "Actually, yes, I did hear that. And I was actually trying to figure out how that could have been possible, because we use a very secure phone line when we talk to our customers, and there's really no way for someone to actually block my ability to speak to you. Like, even if someone was on the call, you would still be able to hear me, and I was trying to yell to you, and you weren't hearing me, so I don't know how that would have happened. I definitely heard the voice. I don't know what that was, and I'm so sorry." So both of them are definitely weirded out by it, but, you know, the customer service rep, he's got a job to do, and he's like, "Hey, your internet works again. Thanks. Talk to you soon." He hangs up, and Bill's left with his internet working again, but now that's the fourth strange thing. He has the thing that runs across the room as he's watching TV. He has the thing that ran across his feet at night. He has his bed shaking, and now he has this, like, devil voice speaking in tongues on the phone that the customer service rep also heard and couldn't make sense of. He decides to, you know, I'm done doing research for the night. It's, you know, 3 a.m. or whatever it was. I'm going to just try to get a couple hours of sleep because this is just starting to freak me out a little bit. So Bill gets back in his bed and he's trying to sleep, but he can't stop thinking about the fact that there have been 4 strange occurrences in the span of just a couple of hours. And he can't help himself but start to feel a little bit worried that something that he doesn't understand is going on, something bad is going on. And as he's sitting there desperately trying to sleep, he swears he can hear some sort of sound underneath his bed. He knows it could be his mind playing tricks on him, but it doesn't matter. He thinks he hears it, and it's now he's officially spooked. Like a child, he pulls the covers over his head, and he's just laying on his bed with the covers over his head, just basically trying to convince himself, like, this isn't happening. There isn't anything under your bed. Just relax. Nothing's happening. He's got his legs sucked up, you know, up near his chest. He's just under his sheets. And the way he was positioned is he had left a light on in his room, and there was a light basically beaming down onto the sheet that was over the upper part of his body. So there's a little bit of light into the cavern under his sheets. And so he's holding it up over his head, and as he's sitting there, like, trying to tell himself that nothing's going on, he looks down towards the foot of his bed, under his covers, right? And he sees a hand slowly reaching up from the side of the bed, come up and try to grab his foot. It just misses and then retracts out from under the bed. Bill literally leaps out of bed, flips on every light, and is now in just absolute crisis mode. He immediately is, like, up against the wall, doesn't even want to look under the bed, but eventually he does. He kind of pokes under. Nothing's down there. He looks around his room. There's no sign of anybody in the room. And now it's like, okay, you've had so many strange occurrences, and none of it makes sense. Like, what are you going to do? And he had no idea. So Bill does not attempt to go back to bed that night. He goes downstairs, flips on every light in his house, starts drinking coffee like he's awake. He's like, I'm not doing this tonight. And so he stays up the rest of the night. So the next day, Bill just tries to have a normal day. He doesn't want to think about what happened the night before. So he goes to work like normal, doesn't tell anybody about it. Again, Bill, he's a straight shooter. He's not about to be, you know, the former NASA robotics engineer that's like, hey, let me tell you about the paranormal stuff that's happening in my house. He's doing everything he can to not think like that. And so by the end of the day, he started to feel a little bit of anxiety as he's getting ready to go back to his house because he would have to potentially face some of the strange things that happened the night before. It could happen again tonight. And so he gets home, has all his lights on. You know, he's not about to keep his lights on. And he's sitting in his chair. He always sits in the same one where he was watching TV and saw that thing far across the room. He's sitting there, and he's eating his microwave dinner, and he's watching TV, again, all the lights on in his house. And he looks down for a minute to get another bite of food. And when he looks up, a bottle is zinging towards him. He moves his head out of the way, and it hits the wall beside him, and it breaks. It's a glass bottle. It shatters on the ground. And then all the lights in the house go out. So Bill runs to the closet where he knows he has a flashlight. He opens it up, reaches for the flashlight, and as he's about to pull it out, he hears in the closet, towards the top of the closet, this loud slamming sound. and he had a couple pretty heavy boxes on the very top shelf in his closet, and it sounded like someone had almost lifted one up and then slammed it down on the top shelf. But obviously he didn't do that, and it totally freaked him out. He grabs the flashlight, shines it in the closet. There's no one in there. There's nothing in there. And he backs out, and then the lights come back on. And his heart's racing because he knows what just happened. Someone just threw a bottle at his head. You know, someone just slammed something in his closet, and he's in full panic mode. And so the only person he can think to call is his brother, because he's not prepared to go to the police, because the things he would need to describe are kind of nonsensical sounding. But his brother, who's very rational, equally kind of pragmatic in his approach to everything, he calls his brother and he's like, get over here, I got some weird stuff happening in my house, and I just need a sanity check. And so his brother, Bob, his younger brother Bob, he comes over. And as soon as Bob gets there, Bill is like, he had never had a discussion about the paranormal with his brother before, so he's just like, all right, this is going to sound weird, but Bob, I need you to just go in this closet and just go in the closet. And Bob's like, what in the world are you talking about? And Bill's like, please, just go in there. I'm going to shut the door, and I want you to just tell me what happens. And so Bob's like, all right. Bob goes in the closet. Bill shuts the door behind him. Bill's just out there waiting. And Bill calls to Bob, hey, turn off the light. There's a little pull string, little tiny light bulb. Turn off the light in there. So, you know, Bob's like, all right. Turns off the light. It's pitch black in there. And so at the time, Bob would not tell Bill what happened to him in the closet. Mostly because if you put yourself in Bob's position, he doesn't have any of the context. He doesn't have anything that happened. He's never experienced anything like this before. And so what he experiences, he kind of chalks up to probably his own doing. He doesn't think that someone did it to him. And so what happens is he's in the closet, and he feels something hit his leg. And he thinks, oh, I must have knocked into something that hit my leg, like a pair of shoes or something. And he's just standing there. And then something hits him hard in the face, and he thinks, oh, you know, I must have hit something on the top shelf that fell and hit me in the head. But the two things combined, it did unsettle him a little bit, and he consciously decided, I'm not going to tell my brother Bill that this happened because I'll only feed into his own paranoia right now, and that's not what he needs. He opens the closet, gets out, and he's like, you know what, Bill, nothing happened in there. You got nothing to worry about. There's nothing in here. And so he leaves, and Bill is left kind of crestfallen because he feels like he really didn't do a good job conveying to his brother just how much had happened in the house so far. He basically said, oh, I've heard some strange noises, go in the closet, and then nothing really happened. So he feels like out of his element. He just feels like he doesn't know how to handle it. And so he has only one other person that he feels comfortable kind of letting in to this situation, because it was just kind of embarrassing for Bill. I mean, he's this esteemed NASA employee. The last thing he wants is to have somebody think that he's, like, losing his mind a little bit. But he has his friend, Michael, who is a sound engineer that worked for a couple podcasts. And when he calls him, Bill doesn't even really know what he's going to say to Michael. He just needed to talk to someone, like a friendly voice kind of thing. And he calls him, and Michael's a little bit surprised to see Bill calling him. And they have a little bit of small talk. And Bill says to Michael, you know, I don't know how to approach this with you, but I moved to Arlington, and I've got some weird stuff going on in my house, and I guess I'm just telling you because I don't know what else to do. And so Michael's like a little bit caught off guard and is a little bit just worried about his friend, and he starts asking him some basic questions, just, oh, well, what have you heard? Like, you know, what have you seen? Just not really sure if it's even remotely worth exploring, but just asking some basic questions. And as they're having this exchange, the voice that came on the phone during the call to the customer service rep for the internet provider came on the phone. And all of a sudden, Bill can't hear Michael, and Michael can't hear Bill. All they both hear is this voice, this, like, angry, kind of demonic-sounding voice that sounds very threatening. And so while this is going on, Michael just instinctively is like, well, I have all my sound set up here. And he grabs a mic, and he puts it to the receiver and starts recording. And for a minute and a half, he sits there recording this voice. And then about 30 seconds into the recording, not that Michael could hear it, Bill on the other end, who's heard this voice before, and he's starting to get the feeling that this whole thing is bad. Like, it's bad. And he starts yelling to Michael to hang up. Don't listen to this. Hang up. Hang up the phone. Don't listen to the voice. He's yelling for him. And then after about a minute and a half of this chaos that Michael's recording, the voice suddenly stops. And it goes back to Bill and Michael talking to each other.
and it's like crystal clear. And so Michael immediately says, "Hey, Bill, you there? And Bill's like, "Yeah, I'm here. I was trying to get you to get off the phone. You can't listen to this stuff. I don't know what it is, but it's bad." And Michael just goes, "No, listen. I recorded that. Here, let me play it back for you." And so he starts playing it back, and it's silence. Except for when Bill was yelling to Michael, "Don't listen to it. Hang up. Don't listen to it." And Michael is yelling in the beginning to Bill, like, "Hey, what is that? What is this?" But then it's all silence in between. So they aren't speaking to each other, even though they're on the phone with each other. And they hear something, but the recording only picked up their voices, not the demonic, possessed-sounding voice. At this point, Bill is starting to get a little bit scared. Maybe he wouldn't admit to it, but he's alone in this house, and all the strange stuff is happening, and he just decides that he's going to invite his brother over for dinner. And Bill is in the chair that he always sits in, and Bob and his wife Cindy are on the couch, and they're kind of having a nice time. Bill recalled feeling, you know, it was just nice to have other people in the house. And they're watching TV, and as they're watching TV, suddenly Bill just stands up and kind of runs over to the room where he had originally seen that thing dart by, this rodent or whatever he saw. And Bob and Cindy obviously see him get up and run over, and they're like, "Hey, what'd you see? What was that?" And Bill's like, "Okay, I don't know how to describe what I saw, but I saw this thing that's in my house. And, you know, Bob, I brought you over here because I've just been seeing this animal or something running around my house, and I swear I just saw it. And he goes, "Hey, look, Bob, sit in my chair," because it was the only vantage point into this room. The couch where Bob and Cindy were sitting, they couldn't really see into this room. And he goes, "Just listen to me, Bob, sit in my seat and just sit here and just watch the TV. Don't pay attention to the room. Just watch the TV and just see if something catches your eye. Because, you know, maybe I'm seeing something that is totally rational. But something's happening. Just do what I was doing." And so Bob's like, "All right." So he sits in the chair. Bill sits next to Cindy, and they start watching TV again. And Bob, all of a sudden, just clearly reacts to seeing something in the other room. And he goes, "Oh, my God. What is that?" And they all stand up, and Bill is like, "Well, what'd you see?" And Bob's like, "I don't know. It was like some kind of small animal or something. And it looked like it was on 2 feet. It did not look like a four-legged animal. That's like a two-legged animal. What was that?" And so Bob, he's now feeling like, "I was in that closet. Some weird stuff happened that I didn't tell Bill about. Now this," and he's like, "Okay, Cindy," his wife, "Cindy, you sit in the seat. You do this now." And so now Bill and Bob are sitting on the couch watching Cindy, and Cindy's watching the TV. Of course, in just a matter of minutes, she sees something dart across the room. Now, was she just kind of jumping on the bandwagon because these two saw it? Maybe, but she certainly described the same thing that Bill and Bob claimed to have seen, which was a bipedal, small creature that was just running through the dining room. And so the three of them turn on all the lights, and they start searching the house. They're going to find this animal or thing in the house, and they search everywhere for hours, and they can't find anything. Finally, after, you know, it's getting late, Bob and Cindy are like, "Hey, Bill, I don't know what's happening in your house, but why don't you just come stay with us? We got a guest room. Just crash with us tonight, and you can come back in the morning and call animal control or whatever you want to do, but just, you shouldn't be here tonight. There's too many weird things happening here." Bill, in a way, was actually kind of happy, because now he had someone that he trusted and loved, his own family, that had confirmed that they were seeing the same things he was. That even though that is terrifying, that all of a sudden Bill is alone in this house with some creature, this small bipedal creature running around the house, at least he wasn't losing his mind. Or if he was, at least other people were too. So he was kind of relieved, and he was like, "You know what? I'm not going to go with you because I don't want to just like give up my house. What will I do when I come back if it keeps happening? Like, I don't want to just give this up." So Bob and Cindy leave, and now Bill is determined to now, for the first time, start looking up paranormal explanations for what was happening. So quickly, Bill realizes that you can't just search the paranormal. There's too many things online. It's so hard to tell what is considered like credible and what isn't, because there's just no fact-checking going on. It's just people kind of putting things on the internet. And so what he decided he would do is, instead of him doing the research, he would find a paranormal investigative team that at least appeared to approach their investigations much the way a scientist would. That instead of looking for proof, you know, the paranormal exists. Instead, that their approach would be like looking for an answer, even if that answer was totally normal. And so he starts researching for investigative paranormal teams that have a scientific focus that are in Texas in the area. And he actually finds one, and he reaches out to them, and they were actually available that night to come over. So he says, please, come over. I need your help. So the leader of the paranormal team was a man by the name of Brian Hall. And when they get there, it's Brian and a couple of his crew members. They don't start with, you know, diving into the paranormal investigation side. They start by looking for obvious answers, because they found that many times when someone claims they have a paranormal event happening, it's something like, you know, a bad AC unit or a creaky door or a branch outside that's rubbing against the house. And so they did a very lengthy and thorough examination of the outside and inside of the house, looking for things like that. And they determined that there wasn't anything obvious that was a rational explanation, so now it warranted setting up some equipment. And so what they did is they set up a couple of cameras in Bill's bedroom, where a lot of the activity apparently was happening, and they set up these laser beams that basically beamed lasers in every direction, and they would place them in his bedroom. So there was like laser beams all over the room. And if anything walked past any of these lasers, you would see the beams move, and it's very obvious. So it's a way to detect motion in the room. And so they set these beams up, and they start filming, and for a long time, nothing is happening. Bill, Brian Hall, the team are just sitting in the dining room downstairs, just like listening to silence and watching nothing happen. And so Brian suggests, hey, you know, why don't one of his team members go up and just literally interact with the room a little bit? Go in there, kind of like yell, do something, kind of stir it up, so to speak. And then we'll see if anything happens. And so one of the team members goes up to the room and walks in and is like, hey, is anybody in here? And, you know, nothing's happening. You can see on the footage that, you know, he jumps onto the bed and he's sitting on the bed. And at some point, as he's yelling out to whatever was in the room, like, hey, if you're in here, show yourself. All of a sudden, on camera, you hear a laser fall. He jumps out of bed, and he runs out of the room. And the rest of the team comes up, and they gather up the cameras, and they immediately watch the footage. And as they're watching the footage, you can see this mist that begins to form in the room that the team member who was in there just didn't see. And the mist starts swirling in front of the laser beams on the camera, before you hear off camera one of the laser beams falling to the ground. So at first they're just kind of dumbfounded, and they're like, well, how did the mist get in there? Like, what is that? And is it possible that perhaps the laser beam rolled off a table or something? Maybe it was positioned in such a way that it could have rolled off. And so what they did is they raised the sound levels inside of the actual video, and they made out a couple of words. And so at this point, Brian Hall and his team feel like they have quite a bit of data that actually does lend credibility to the idea that there is something paranormal happening in Bill's house. So as they're packing up to leave, they say to Bill, like, you gotta go. You can't be here. Like, I'm surprised you're still here now. And Bill just was this super prideful guy, and he just was like, no, I'm gonna stay. Like, I've made the decision. I'm not gonna run. Stay here in this house. And they're like, that's a bad idea. And honestly, they were right, because some pretty horrible stuff happens after they leave. So that night, he knows he's not going to sleep. So he has all his lights on in his bedroom. He's sitting with his knees tucked up to his chin. He has upbeat music, like classical music, but very upbeat music playing on the radio right next to his bedside. And he's just trying to like kind of create good vibes in his room. And so as he's sitting there, he hears what sounds like Mack truck smashing into the side of his house. Like, it was so loud and just deafening that he instantly sprints out of his door, runs downstairs, runs outside to like inspect the damage to his property. And nothing's outside. There's nothing. There's no Mack truck. There's no damage to his house. There's nothing. He walks all around his property. He's like, did something fall in the street? Am I losing my mind? Like, what's going on? And so he goes back in the house after quite a bit of looking around, seeing if something might have fallen off of his roof that made a sound. Nothing. He goes back in his house, and as soon as he steps foot in his house, he hears a similarly loud crashing sound, as if, you know, a vehicle is smashing into his house, except it's inside of his house, in his dining room. It was in the same room where he first initially spotted that thing running across the ground. And so he runs in there to look for some horrible damage to the inside of his house, but there's nothing disturbed. There's nothing shaking. There's nothing out of place. His dining room is intact. And as he's sitting there, he hears his car alarm go off outside. And now he's thinking, this thing is screwing with me. I'm not going to let it win. I've stayed here against better judgment for multiple days. I'm not going to give in now. And so Bill kind of goes into fight mode. Now he's mad. And he's, instead of being scared of what's happening, he starts screaming at the top of his lungs, like, show yourself! And so as he's doing that, he hears yet another loud crashing sound up in his bedroom. So he runs upstairs ready to, you know, fight with whatever this is in his house, because it's gotten to a breaking point for Bill. He charges in his room. There's nothing in there. But unlike the dining room, and unlike when he was outside, the crashing sound continues while he's in the bedroom. So he's standing in his bedroom, holding his ears from the deafening crashing sounds over and over and over again, but there's nothing moving. There is no way for the sound to be emanating from that room, but it is. And after what feels like an eternity of this horrible smashing sound, it just completely stops, and it's dead silence. And Bill, like, lifts his hands off his ears, and he's looking around, and, you know, he's expecting it to start again, but it doesn't. And it's just dead silence in the entire house. After quite a while, and he still doesn't hear anything, he gets back in his bed. All the lights are on. You know, his radio's on. And he tucks his legs up to his chin, and he's just like holding himself basically in the fetal position. And he is, at this point, he's now just petrified. Like, he had his big fight moment, but I think he's now thinking that this thing was just challenging me back. It's basically saying, I can do whatever I want to you, and you can't touch me. I can do whatever I want, you can't touch me. And he's realizing that maybe he could have made it worse, and he's sitting there knowing he's not going to sleep. It's still the middle of the night, and he starts hearing a noise that sounds like maybe shuffling. Shuffling of feet, something's moving around underneath his bed. And as he's sitting on his bed, at the head of his bed near his pillow, with his feet tucked in, he looks at the foot of his bed, and this huge, just wide, 6-foot-tall black figure emerges in pure, it's bright in the room. This black figure emerges at the foot of his bed. It's got this huge tooth coming out of its mouth, and it gets into this jerky position and starts moving towards Bill. And it gets right in front of him, and it puts its face right against Bill's, then grunts, and then disappears. Bill continued to see this horrible black figure in his house, and it continued to kind of challenge Bill. And Bill stopped challenging it back. And so Bill started waking up with these scratches on his chest. He was hospitalized a couple of times, prompting the hospital to do welfare checks on Bill, because he was showing up with these like mini heart attacks because of the stress that he claimed was from having this stuff happening to him. And, you know, his family's so concerned. And it wasn't until Bill started really doing some aggressive research on demons that he read about exorcisms. And he remembered that when he showed up for that house call, a lot of the language that he was hearing coming from that woman who was screaming, you know, leave these people, leave this house, it sounded like an exorcism. And he was thinking that, do you think it's possible that the exorcist knew that she needed another host for these demons? And so she planned it so that she would have this water purification person show up right at 5 p.m. so that she could be at the part of her exorcism where she could cast the demons onto him. After two exorcisms of his own to his house, it still hasn't stopped. He's still, to this day, is dealing with the paranormal activity in his house. And when asked why he hasn't sold his house, is he thinks that he couldn't live with himself if he ever put another person through what he has dealt with at his house. I don't know about you, but I would not have lived in that house for an additional 18 years. That just sounds like the worst. But, you know, I'm not Bill, and so he's made up his mind that that's what he needs to do. But for me, anyways, I would have left that house. I would have abandoned that house, more than likely. But I'd love to hear what you would do in that situation, and I'd love to just get your feedback on the story. It's interesting when you have a story like this coming from the mouth of someone so credible, like a NASA robotics engineer who's inherently skeptical, and having lots of corroborating evidence. I'd love to hear what you all think about this particular story, and whether you think this is true or just something else that's totally rational and easy to explain. Love to hear in the comments. That's going to do it, guys. Before you go, if you want to get in touch with me, you can message me on Instagram. My handle is JohnBallen416. Also, I'm very active on TikTok. My handle is Mr. Ballen. And if you like this video, again, if you would, please pulverize the like button and turn on all notifications so you can get more of these types of stories. That's going to do it, guys. Take care.
And that would do it for me. And that would do it for me. Thank you for tuning in to the Queer Without Podcast Show. Live long and prosper, everyone. May the force of God be with you.